भगवद गीता द प्रैक्टिकल साइंस ऑफ अंडरस्टैंडिंग एंड देन रीचिंग अवर ट्रू गोल इन लाइफ इज वॉट वी आर स्टडिंग इन दिस वीकली क्लासेस एंड वी सॉ दैट द कॉज ऑफ our confusion in life as to what we should do, what we should not do. Also, the different pulls that we experience in life as to our emotions pull us in one direction, our intellect pulls in some other direction. Our physical nature, our habits, they pull us in some third direction. And sometimes it becomes a big torture. It is, suppose somebody is being pulled on two sides, then and very forcefully, then it is a very painful state. So our psyche has this very painful, forcefully painful state that we experience. And the way out is this knowledge that what is the true goal of our life, how should we approach it. This analysis of our personality leads to the proper diagnosis. And when there is the proper diagnosis, then proper medication too can be given. So, we saw that the true knowledge of our inner being is very vital for that is our goal in life. We seek that. And when we get that, then that knowledge frees us. The all knots of bondage are cut asunder when we know this truth. It is what we identify with, that is what becomes our awareness. Like when I am identified with the body, then the conditions of body automatically become binding on me. It is my identification with body that is the cause of it. If I am body, whatever is applicable to body becomes automatically applicable to me. Like body is born, body grows, body has states like sometimes it is in good health, sometimes it is not in that good health. So all that then becomes applicable to me too. Body is confined in space and time. So because I am body, my identification with body makes me confined to space and time, that I am here and I am in this time. All this becomes a bondage on me because this identification, I am body. When we question that identification, when we try to probe deeper, then we see that this is not correct. This identification is something false. I am not body. Body keeps on changing. I have a dimension that is beyond the body and even beyond the mind. That is my true nature, my true reality, and that is divine. It is where my craving for immortality will become successful. We all have that craving to exist. I want to be immortal. even if I don't want to admit it. Because people will laugh at us if I say I want to become immortal. It is everybody has to die, we know. But still, inside, that craving is there, which gets expressed actually unconsciously in all our actions. We want to keep the death away, maybe by taking many medications. We await many discoveries in medical science. I had read about some person who has put in lot of money, was a very wealthy person, and has put lot of money to keep his body intact by using whatever, you know, putting it in complete vacuum and cold and all that, so that it will not decay. And in future, some treatment will become available so that it can be revived. So at that time, then that procedure must be applied. Why? Because the person doesn't want to die. Nobody wants to die. As we know, this is an important principle, as Darwin told in his theory of evolution, struggle for existence. That is what we struggle for. We want to exist. And as bodies, we cannot exist too long. In fact, the body is the name of the change is called body. So therefore, it is changing all the time. And therefore, it is you cannot have an immortal body. But when you transcend this awareness, this false identification that I am body, then what can kill you? There is no birth for you, no death for you. It is only when you are body, you are born, you die. When you are not body, the words become meaningless. The words that birth and death, they are no longer applicable there. It is only when we consider ourselves to be body, they become applicable. That is why in the prayer that we recite every Friday before the class, it says, how is this Bhagavad Gita? Advaitam Rita Varshinim. That is, it showers the nectar of non-duality. It removes this awareness of duality, I and the world, or I and the God. It brings this sense of one all-pervading reality that is beyond time, beyond space. And thus, there is no death. By duality, there is no escape from death. You have to die. In fact, one of the Upanishads called this living also death. Living in this ignorance is as good as death. It therefore says that you travel not from life to death, but from death to death. When you are in this duality, when you are perceiving this fragmented awareness, the awareness is fragmented and endlessly fragmented, because each goes on getting divided and subdivided endlessly. And thus, living in this endless fragmented awareness, that is, travel from death to death. But when this ignorance goes away and you see that it is the self alone that is existing everywhere, then the meaning of life and death ceases for you. You become immortal, actually. Not that you have to take any other medication for that. This medication of knowledge will take away all that idea that I will die. Swami Vivekananda therefore says in his lectures on Practical Vedanta. A very beautiful book, very inspiring, that Practical Vedanta. He says, how can I die when even one creature in this universe is alive? I have no death because I am living through that body. The same I is there in everyone. This truth is very difficult to feel in the state of ignorance, because we will always be feel, I am good, the other fellow is bad. And thus, there is no escape from suffering and death in our life. But when this knowledge of underlying oneness dawns, why underlying? Not that there will be no perception of superficial distinctions, but there will be superficial distinctions like that of those of waves on the ocean. They are distinct, but the underlying ocean for all those waves is one. So when that knowledge dawns, then you know that you are pulsating through all waves. So when one wave subsides, doesn't mean you die. You are there in other innumerable waves. So this knowledge therefore is very important. And we have to use different techniques to imbibe this knowledge, cultivate it, and we should become one with it. This ninth chapter that we have been studying is a part of giving us these tools to learn to feel that the God is the reality of everything, and one must form a loving connection with that God. That really accelerates the process of knowledge. The knowledge and love, in fact, their closeness is so much. As we see, that if you have the knowledge of something, and if that is really a good knowledge about it, then you feel more attracted to it. Like somebody who listens to music, very much in love with music, likes to listen to music. But when the understanding of music becomes more pronounced, the love for that music also becomes more. It is in everything that where the more the inner knowledge develops, the more love also develops. And thus, the love for God will intensify, will make this knowledge stronger. And conversely, the more we understand this one presence in everything, our love for God will go on becoming more and more pronounced and functional in life. What happens with love is that it makes a very functional, very dynamic impact on life. What you love, automatically that love will make your actions correspond to that love. Yes, I must now go to home. Today is my little son's birthday. I have to go home early from my work. I have to take the cake for him. Now, what is there? It is the love that makes all these actions automatically happen. That things become functional. You know, the love makes the life dynamically connected to the beloved. And so when we develop love for God, see, the priorities become different in life. When the love is for, say, son or daughter or a wife or husband or all that, the life is governed by that love. But when that love is concentrated on God. Now, not that you don't love others, but you love them as manifestations of God, and your concentration then is on God. That becomes then expressed through all actions, and every action then becomes that feeling of God will be expressed in every action, and it will fill our life with tremendous sense of bliss and satisfaction. And this can be seen actually in the lives of such people. So Lord is telling that such people, constantly try or constantly are glued to think about me. It is that they talk about me. They instead of talking about other things, they talk about that those who they have no other subject of talking. It is like the lovers of baseball, they always will be talking about baseball. And those the lovers of different movies, whenever they meet, they will talk about that. And the lovers of politics, whenever they meet, they start talking about it. So lovers of God, they will talk only about God. And then there are various ways in which this worshipful attitude can be carried. The personality is to be transformed in our intellectual aspect also. So that is what he calls Jnana Yajna. In the 15th verse of 9th chapter, Jnana Yajnena Chapyanne Yajanto Mamupasate Ekatvena Prithaktvena Bahudha Vishvato Mukham. Worshipping through the knowledge sacrifice, others adore me, either as identical or as separate, or they adore me, the manifold, in different forms. So this is how the knowledge brings out the love. And just as the love intensifies the knowledge, knowledge brings out love too. And why it is called Jnana Yajna, worshipping through knowledge sacrifice. And knowledge itself brings a sacrifice. Knowledge is a sacrifice in the sense, it can be understood like this, that suppose this example I have given very often because it illustrates it very well, that you are holding on to a $100 bill and you are keeping it with great care so that it doesn't get lost. You are holding on to it, you know it is $100 bill. Now when you come to know that it is a counterfeit, it is a fake bill, now that knowledge, what will it happen now? Now automatically you will give it up. It will make you trash that bill. It is no more important for you, except you may keep it to show it to your friends. You know, hey, how I got cheated. So it is, apart from that, that bill has no more value for you. It is a sacrifice, but that sacrifice is a sacrifice through knowledge. And therefore it is not a painful sacrifice, that it is okay, that it is not real, so you drop it. So we try to hold on to so many things in this world with the knowledge or ignorance passing for knowledge, that they are real, they are important. That sense of their being real makes them important for us. just as that $100 bill. It is real, it is important. When the understanding comes that this is unreal, then the attraction for them, the desire to hold on to them, that also automatically vanishes. You don't have to be told, no, in religious spiritual life you have to renounce. And then you make an effort to do that. But the knowledge, when it dawns, then renunciation is spontaneous renunciation. It is automatic. You don't hold it because it is unreal. You know it is unreal, and then it drops off from your mind. So this is a renunciation coming out of the knowledge. So there is a very nice idea about it, that to the extent that we get this knowledge, to that extent the renunciation happens. Now, if we press this renunciation, then the corresponding knowledge also dawns, because these two are connected, and so they have a concomitance there. They are, one rises, the other also rises. So, you can make effort to get more knowledge, and thus the renunciation will happen. The other way also, try to give up the things, and that will also give rise to the more knowledge. It is therefore the both the practices are to be carried on. It is the jnana yajna is therefore a twofold thing, that you give up because of knowledge, and then you give up to get knowledge. As it is said in Ishavasya Upanishad, that this knowledge is to be protected through renunciation. Tena tyaktena bhunjitha. The knowledge of all pervasiveness of God, that God is the only reality in all these names and forms. Ishavasyamidaggam sarvam yatkinch jagatyam jagat. That everything in this world is pervaded with this one divine principle. Now, how will you be able to hold on to this knowledge? Tena tyaktena bhunjitha. That by renunciation, you protect this knowledge. If you do not renounce, then this knowledge, whatever little as it is coming, it will not find the passage. And therefore, it will not become functional in life. So, to the extent we understand, we should just step in, make strong effort to separate ourselves from that which is illusory. And one should not say, when it is that knowledge will come, automatically everything will go away. So, before it comes, let me run after those things. Then it is like it with this knowledge will also never come, and then because knowledge doesn't come, you don't realize God, and you therefore you don't renounce. It is like you don't get the job because you don't have experience. And why you cannot get experience? You don't have the job, so you don't get experience. So it is like that. One should be very cautious about these traps. Our mind can keep on deceiving us, and nobody deceives us more than our own minds. And so therefore one must be particular not to get into this kind of trap. It is this trap comes in many ways, like what can I do when the God will shower his grace? Without his grace nothing happens. So, because God is not showering the grace on me, I am not doing any spiritual practice, let the God shower the grace. Well, the other part is also there. If you don't do your spiritual practices, when you don't make those intense efforts, then that means you don't want any grace. You are shutting the doors of grace, and thus you won't get it. Therefore, one should avoid this kind of cyclic trap, should make efforts on both sides. It is very important to understand this principle. And then Lord says that, look, everything is really to be done with this spirit, this understanding of God. That this spiritual practices means that. It is not just a ritual, but the feeling that through these God is manifesting. This idea is to be seen in these everything, like the next verse says. In fact, next two verses, they bring out this important truth. Aham kratraham yajnah swadhaham aham aushadham mantroham aham evacham aham agniraham hutam pitaham asya jagato mata dhata pitamaha vedyam pavitram omkara raksam ayajurevacha. I am kratu, I am yajna, I am the oblation to the I am oblation to the mains. I am the product of annuals. I am the mantra. I alone am the clarified butter. I am the sacrificial fire, the offering in the fire. The sacrifice is means there is a ritual associated with it, where you have some sacred formula, mantras. Then the one who performs that sacrifice, that person is there. Then there are the particular oblations, which are called, when you do them, you say swadha, means offered. So then there are certain plants which are required for that, certain chemicals, certain plants are required. Then the particular mantras are required to be recited. Lord says that, and then there is, of course, the oblation, the butter that is poured in the fire, that also is there. So, and the fire itself that is there. Lord says that, no, that I am in all these. And then that sacrificing or that particular ritual will become a devotional worship, when everything is connected with God. It can be applied to every ritual, friends. Let us see that, you know, what makes a particular action a worship. You say, go to a religious place, a temple or a church, and then you carry some flowers maybe, and you offer the flowers, you kneel down, you bend and bow down. All these things, these are actions. If you just look at them, these are actions. What makes them worship? When you perform these actions, then one says that, well, I was worshipping. You were performing certain actions. What makes those actions worship? These are just actions. They are worship because of the connection with God. These actions are symbols to feel God. And the symbols are very important in this. In this today morning, we have every morning the a piece of reading from Swami Vivekananda. And today's reading had this beautiful idea of how the words, the sounds, they are symbols. And how you connect those, that brings out the particular power in those words. Understanding, therefore, this power of words and using them, Swami Vivekananda says, they're a great statement that understanding this power of the word as a symbol and applying and using it correctly, that is also an aspect of karma yoga, he says. Because what he is hinting at is that, look, every action is also a symbol. Like you smile at a person when you want to greet or show your that acquaintance and affection, you smile at that person. Now this smile is an action indicative of some feelings. That action indicates that I welcome you, I greet you, I love you. Now this is a symbol to indicate those feelings, a small symbol. Like this is all really the information technology, that you you compact the information and put a name to it, and then that name then invokes automatically. It opens so many files or presses so many buttons. Just one word can bring out so many different buttons get pressed. So many different emotions become opened. And that depends on that, how that word is associated, not only in the mind of the user, but also in the mind of the listener. So therefore, it is very important that how we use those symbols. Swami Vivekananda gives there the example of this symbol of swastika. These lectures were given much before the advent of Hitler and Nazism, so that the original meaning of swastika is a very beautiful meaning. Swasti means well-being. When it is said swastika, means it is a well-being symbol, that may the divine bring well-being to us. That is the meaning, etymological meaning of this word swastika. Now, when this word is used, it is important that this word should be understood in its proper meaning. When I use this word, somebody thought that I am anti-Semitic. And because those buttons get inadvertently pressed, it was no idea. But there was no understanding of the swastika beyond that context. In some people's minds, the only association that they know of swastika is with Nazi and Hitler. So therefore, whenever they see swastika, they become agitated, kind of disturbed. But the swastika is at least 4,000 or 5,000 year old symbol, which always meant the idea of well-being. That is the meaning of it. Now, should this 4,000 or 5,000 years of history of well-being associated with this symbol, should it be erased? just because of some 10, 15 or 20 years of somebody misusing that symbol? It is a question. One therefore should be very understanding about how the symbols get developed and how one symbol can generate different emotions in different people. It is not that the same symbol will be equally good for everyone, but therefore one must understand and not to permanently associate one word with that and that emotion alone. It is and the listeners also therefore must understand that the word that I am hearing can be having a much different and wider and deeper meaning that I perceive. It is, I am giving this example just to indicate that the every word that we utter or every action that we do, it has a symbolic meaning. And that symbolic meaning, like the smile, I said that the smile has different connotations. Sometimes it indicates happiness, sometimes it indicates slighting or satiring somebody, making that to laugh at someone, it has a different connotation, a different idea. So similarly, when you the smile, somebody can take that meaning too. But therefore, it is important that we see that the symbology of every action is properly understood in the with the intended meaning. The intended meaning is to be looked into rather than the meaning that one perceives due to, say, upbringing in a particular context, a particular situation and so forth. It is here the idea is that all these actions, they are symbols. When you connect with God, they become worship. That's it. That when the symbolized is God, then it is worship. The cooking, everybody, you know, they do cooking. But when that cooking is done for offering to God, then that is part of worship. When you are lighting a lamp, when you are lighting a lamp, say in a shrine, it is an act of worship. Otherwise, it is just an ordinarily lighting the lamp for reading a book. That need not be then thought of as worship. But if one makes the habit of doing everything with the spirit of worship by feeling God in it, that there is God in this, there is God in this, there is God in this, then what happens is every action becomes pervaded through the spirit of worship. And thus, the life becomes completely inundated with this spirit of worship. It is a very blessed state that I have seen some people that really everything that they used to do, they expressed that spirit of worship. One Swami that I knew, he was very highly respected and he actually used to perform worship at our headquarters for many, many years, and he was very well known for his scriptural understanding and especially the understanding behind his rituals of worship. So, it was very nice to see and meet that person. Very gentle, very that as if the love is coming out without any, the actions were all very, very, mild, serene, no exuberance, like that enthusiasm wasn't seen out through the actions, but that calmness, that very measured, everything was just exact, the finger movements, the movement of the eyes, the speech, where only one word would do, he won't use two words. It is very difficult, you know, to and all this was with that feeling of God. It is, it was wonderful to, be with such a person. So it is a big lesson to just be with such person, that the spirit of worship is in every action, everything would be felt that as a manifestation of the divine within. The simple acts like explaining us as a very junior novice, I had gone to him to understand some ideas behind the worship, and he was explaining with such these care and details. It was beautiful to feel that spirit and know that God is pervading in every action. It is feeling, that feeling is to be generated, cultivated. It is, it won't come initially in every action, especially all those actions which we do for the caring of this body itself. Because I am this and so I take care of this. So it is all those actions, it is difficult to bring the spirit of worship. So take up some actions first, like do the worship. Let me do worship, ritualistic worship, or let me spend time in meditation, or let me spend some time in the service of God. Then those actions, it is easier to bring the connection of God in those actions to begin with. Then it can pan out in all other actions too. Because once you connect to God through those actions, now the God will start through those actions flowing into us. And as it flows into us, it will start curing us, curing the disease of ignorance in us. As it does that, the other actions also will be done with more unselfishness, more knowledge that I am not this body, the feeling that God is really all around and making me act, that idea will become more and more pronounced, and slowly, unconsciously this happens, that all actions will be done with the that spirit of God. Every action then becomes a blessed worship. Then similarly, Pita Ahamasya Jagatah, that I am the father of the world, the mother, the dispenser, the grandsire, that which is to be known, the purifier, the Om, and also the Vedas, Rig, Sam, and Yaju, all this God says that know my presence in all of these. I am the substance in all these. Like the same example could be useful, that the ocean is in every wave, the same ocean. So that all-pervading God is in each of these. This idea, we think that the wave as a shape is real. forget that it is the wave is a form only. It comes and it goes, and you that form appears to be real because you then give a name to it. This wave, it is very intriguing to analyze these things, that when, what do you mean by this particular person, to what do we refer? It is like a wave changing. The particles are continuously changing. The shape keeps on changing. The qualities, they also keep on changing. What is then that person when you say that that very person? It is if we analyze that beyond a particular context, it is meaningless phrase. It is God alone that is expressing through that person. So we have to feel this through that I am the Father, Pita Hamasya Jagatah. God is our true Father, true Mother. We recite that beautiful verse from childhood. The Hindus are taught that beautiful verse. That God is your father, God is your mother, and God is your brother, God is your friend. Tvameva mata cha pita, tvameva, tvameva bandhushcha sakha, tvameva, tvameva vidya. You are my learning, you are my wealth, you are my everything, O Lord. So, this spirit is to be felt through every action. And as we make effort in that direction, we slowly start feeling these things more and more palpably in life. So, this becomes therefore an important tool to feel and experience the presence of divine in and around in our life. The next verse brings out some more ideas about that gatir bharta prabhu sakshi nivasa sharanam sirhit prabhava pralaya sthanam nidhanam bijam avyayam. I am the goal, the sustainer, the Lord, the witness, the abode, the refuge, the friend, the source, the destroyer, the support, the repository, and the eternal seed. I am all that. It is very important for us to see all these connections. Gatir Bharta. Gati means the goal. Where do we get to in life? What is the destination that we are traveling to? God alone is that destination. Who is feeding me? Who is the provider, the sustainer? That God alone is the provider. Nobody else provides. God alone provides. It is, let us not imagine that I provide to my family. It is not, it is, you are not necessary. It is, you are kind of an instrument there. Like you use a spoon to put food in your mouth, and then do you think that the spoon is a provider? The spoon is a minor instrument in putting that food in mouth. So, when somebody feels that I am earning the money and so I am providing, I am the provider. No, you are not the provider. God is the provider. You are an instrument. If that instrument is not there, some other instrument will do that job. That is a minor instrument. God is the provider. It is, this feeling is to be, you know, strongly inculcated. That this is a big smasher of ego. And many feel that, yes, I am providing all this. If I don't do, nobody will be able to eat at my home. It is an ego. It is, don't think, not that you shouldn't be doing your duty, but don't, let us not think that it is I who am doing that. It is a very wrong idea. The situation may come that you may give food to many and they will not be able to take a grain from it. And I have seen such things happening. Let us not feel the ego that I am provider. No, everybody is taken care of by God. Everybody is taken care of by God. God is the provider. So let us feel this. Prabhu, the Lord of everything. We feel that we have this power to do this. Well, your power is secondarily provided to you by God. When God takes it away, that power is gone. God is the Lord of everything. And that Sri Ramakrishna used to give that beautiful example that when you put the potatoes and tomatoes in a pot boiling in the water, then as the fire underneath makes the water boil, you see them dancing. So the potatoes and tomatoes and all those things, zucchini, will think that, what a nice dance we are doing. What your dance? That fire is making you dance. It is, you are, if the fire is put out, all the dance stops. So, my power is this, I can do what power it is. If the God withdraws, no power remains there. It is to be felt, Lord alone is the power, the controller of everything, is the witness of everything, the real housing for everything. It is, and the really one can get refuge of everyone, the friend of everyone. Everybody can be connected to God. You may have this person as friend or that person as friend, that those relationships may change. But God is the friend of everyone. In fact, even if you don't want God to be your friend, you can't help it. It is God has to be your friend. And can a wave say that let me reject the ocean from me? I don't like ocean. Can the wave remove the ocean from it? It cannot. There is no possibility there of that. So God is to be felt in everything in such a way that when somebody is friend to us, no, that God is our friend through that. So all these, we shall continue the discussion on these things. It is time for now for question answers, if you have any, or we shall conclude with the closing prayers. Any questions? So we shall conclude with the closing prayer. Gita sugita kartavya kimanyat shastra vistarahi ya svayam padmanabhasya mukhapadmadvine srita ekam shastram devaki putra gitam Eko devo devaki putra eva Eko mantra tasya namaniyani Karma pyekam tasya devasya seva Shri Krishna arpanamastu. Tuhan.